Hi, everybody. This is the All Things Like a Bump in the Night podcast. I'm Kelly.
And I am Mouse.
Are you feeling better from last week?
Yes.
Oh my gosh.
I lost 9 pounds in 2 days.
Jesus.
I've gained about two back.
I did the episode alone last week. And I did just kind of like a timeline of events for Casey Anthony. Didn't really get in depth with it like I wanted to because I was having a difficult time. Like, there's just so much information, and I was just kind of... Even with just the timeline of events, it still took me 42 minutes.
Oh, wow.
And I didn't even do, like, a proper introduction or anything like we do, you know, when we record together. Because yeah. Who am I going to have a conversation with?
You missed a golden opportunity. They wouldn't have been able to see it, but you could have been like turning and talking to me, and then you'd turn and pretend to be me and talk in a different voice. Oh yes, that's quite amusing.
That would have been so comical. But
what? That timeline of events doesn't make sense.
I was surprised though, because like I knew about, you know, Casey Anthony accusing her dad of molesting her, but I didn't know that she had also accused her brother and tried to say that her brother was Kaylee's father.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Obviously, the DNA test showed that he wasn't. And even he was like, I don't know where she's coming from with this, because that never happened.
Ew.
Yeah.
Just... The thought of my brother just...
I know. Ugh.
He's out of jail.
Shame?
Yeah, he's in the Brown's house? I don't know. It's down by Gonzaga.
And so is that like a sober house?
Well, he has like a month to find a job, or they send him back to prison.
Okay, so it's kind of like a...
Like a work release house?
Yeah. Like Jeffrey Dahmer was in when he was on probation.
Yeah, my brother just did meth.
Yeah.
He's just weird.
Yeah.
He's the classic rich boy syndrome.
Affluent.
No.
Yeah. Like,
I still curse him for it. Like, you had the... You got so lucky. You got millionaire for grandparents. And you screwed them out of $10,000 and screwed yourself out of your inheritance.
Oh.
You screwed yourself out of millions as their only grandchild.
Wow.
Now it falls to his son and his daughter.
Oh, but it better be where it gets put into a trust until they're 18.
It so will he most has likely
no,
be.
Yeah, so he has no access to
He doesn't even have access to the kids right now.
Oh, wow.
He, according to the court documents, he has to hold a job for a year before he's granted...
Supervised
visitation.
Nice. That's good.
Oh, so let's hope he can stick it out and keep his nose clean this time around.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see. Keep away from the gambling and the reservation.
Well, Gabe is still missing. It's now day nine since I last saw him. I'm like, so heartbroken.
Did you send out flyers in the area and put them in mailboxes?
I haven't. I don't have a printer.
Maybe some old person is like...
Holding on to him.
Keeping them warm and...
Yeah, I should do that. Just put them on my block. That would be a really smart idea, actually. But that also requires me printing out photos of him. Which, I mean, isn't too difficult to do. I can just go to Walmart tomorrow and do that, but... It still sucks. And Toothless, you can tell. It's affecting him, too.
Like, where's my little bro?
Yeah, he goes outside now for only small snippets of time. Usually he's gone all day. He's the one that I wouldn't be worried about if he left, you know, more than a day. Because
he's an adventurer.
He's an adventurer. He holds his own. Like, he's smart. He's got cat street smarts. But Gabe is so dumb... And he just, I love him, but he's not smart.
It's funny, because every time I see him, he's just sleeping.
I know.
He's sleeping or talking.
Yeah.
He's like, hey, open this door. I don't like it closed. Mm-hmm. Now I'm just going to sit here and stare at the open door.
Right? As much as I hated it, I miss it so much. Oh. And, like, this blanket, it's his blanket. Oh. He sleeps on the fuzzy side, and so I've been holding it up against my face at night when I sleep.
And I was just going through my pictures last night, deleting them, because my storage space is almost full, and I was, like, coming across pictures that I've taken of his paws. Mm-hmm. Just his little jelly beans upturned while we're doing the Pond Cat podcast, and I was like, oh.
Yeah.
Jelly beans. Where's my jelly bean snoring kitty?
I know. I miss him so much. But Toothless walks around the house now crying, and he kind of just walks around aimlessly, like he just doesn't know what to do with himself, and he'll walk outside, and he'll stop, and he'll kind of look around, and he'll take a few steps and look, and then he'll come right back inside. This morning I got up, and he was meow, meow, just going off, and I come out of the bathroom, because he was standing at the bathroom door meowing at me. And I thought he wanted outside, and, like, he was purring, he was letting me pet him. I go to let him outside, and he just stands there and just looks at me like, I don't want that. And I was like, are you out of food? Go and check their food bowl, it's still full. And I'm like, I'm sorry, buddy. I miss him too.
Whereas my kitty's being a bitch.
Well, and then the kids keep bringing him up every meal, and I just... Eric finally had to get on Nate for it because I'm just now at a point where I don't cry every time I talk about him or think about him. And over the weekend, you know, Nate was just talking. And I was kind of just shutting down, and Eric was like, dude, stop bringing up Gabe. And he kept talking and kept talking and kept bringing him up. And he's like, dude, I was like crying at this point. He's like, dude, you're making your mom upset. Like, you gotta stop. You're hurting her right now. He's like, I'm sorry. I just really miss him. And I was like, I know. I miss him too.
It's so weird because Mickey brought up Coco out of the blue the other day.
Really?
And he started talking about Coco, and I just looked at him like, dude, no. Mm-hmm. Don't talk about my pup. Mm-hmm. I don't know what triggered him to bring it up, because then he started talking about Mia too. And Mia was the dog, Bob had to put down, the little red-nosed pit.
Okay.
He even wrote a freaking story about it for his creative writing for school.
Oh, wow.
And he's like, before we moved in with my grandparents, my grandpa had a dog named Mia. But Mia started getting really mean once she got off the drugs. And...
What?
Yeah, previous owner used to dope her up.
Oh.
And... Anytime anyone would get near her son, she trained Mia to attack. Mm-hmm. And so she kept the dog high, and she kept aggressive and only protective and loving of her son. Mm-hmm. Because she is a drug addict. Mm-hmm. And that was her only way of protecting him. Mm-hmm. And so once the dog started having the withdrawals, attacked Bob, bit him. Bob had these gnarly gashes in his leg for like 3 months.
Yeah, because he's a diabetic.
Yeah. And so he had to take Mia and get her put down, and Mickey decided to write about it in his creative writing. And I was like, you're not wrong, but I was torn because it took him forever to sit down and think of a topic, and that's an issue he's having problems with at school, is they want him to think on the spot, snap decision, write a story. Mm-hmm. And it takes him time. And so he's like having meltdowns about it and having to bring it home and work on it. Mm-hmm. And it's like, he already had three meltdowns at home trying to write this piece. I can't send him back to rewrite it at this point.
Did you talk to his teacher about how he can't, his brain doesn't work like that?
That's one of the things we talked about at the conference today, and we're not sure how to address it. And she's like, he's just going to have to learn to start getting better. And I'm like, that's...
his brain chemistry, though.
Yeah, and she's saying, as his frontal lobe develops more, it'll become easier. We just have to keep pushing him towards it.
And I can kind of see that, but at the same time, I mean, like I said, I still lean more towards, like, Asperger's with him.
Yeah.
And if he has Asperger's, their brains, they literally cannot
Yeah, he's
function
got
the same way ours do.
1 year checkup today to see how, well, not today, he's got his 1 year checkup coming up within the month to see how things are going with the OCD and the, God, I have to ask Dylan. I'm pretty sure it was ADHD. But yeah. We went and we talked to the doctors, we talked to the counselors, and...
Well, and if it is ADHD, too, that was a problem with Nate, was he couldn't focus. Like, he was in second grade when we got him diagnosed, and he wasn't even at a kindergarten reading level. He couldn't read, he couldn't write, he couldn't do anything. Mickey's got him on the medication. Nathan, as soon as we started him on the medication, though, he turned out he knew how to read. He just couldn't sit and focus enough to do it.
Yeah, see, that's the weird thing. It's only writing for Mickey. He's got decent writing skills, but getting him to sit down and focus on the writing causes him to just completely melt. And for him, he's reading at, like, a fifth grade level, and he's just, he'll sit in a corner and he'll read these, like, advanced books.
Nate does, too.
And he's really, really good at math. She's saying he's beyond elementary school in math skills.
Nate's good at math, too.
Writing and social skills, which is totally, I don't know.
I just know, like, Nate reads chapter books, you know, he loves to read, that's not the issue, and it really bothers me that they say that he is not even approaching, he's at beginning levels of reading, and I'm like, dude, for his birthday, he wanted the entire Goosebumps collection. He's
good
reading,
boy, good boy.
He's reading these huge chapter books, he's read Percy Jackson, like, he loves to read.
So Goosebumps. I just gotta say it now that we're talking about it.
But he come to find out the reason why they're saying he's not at his grade level is he's not reading between the lines. I can't read between the lines either. Like, doesn't mean that I can't read or understand what I'm reading. Like, it's ridiculous.
Huh.
But we also think Nate might have a little bit of a dyslexia.
Yeah, they're saying they can't diagnose Killian with dyslexia until he's at least 9 years old. And I was just like, oh joy, so a few years more of all of these reading issues when we already know that runs in the family as well, and he's...
Yeah, because isn't Dylan dyslexic?
No.
Oh, I thought he was.
It's all of the disabilities and weird things are on my side.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, I know. He can't do A's, C's, O's, B's, D's, P's, 6, and 9.
All letters that can easily be mixed up. That's how Nate is. We did, when we set up his Pokemon Go account, he wanted his gamertag to be Queen01, because he was really into, like, the band Queen. It's Queen.
Oh,
and we can't change it. That I know of.
So back to Goosebumps, though. You guys, my favorite Goosebumps book, everyone should read it because it's awesome, is Say Cheese and Die.
I've read that one. I read pretty much all of them.
Oh, I read them all by second grade that had come out. And I was just, like, blowing through these books. And the teacher's like, how about, I think it was, like, the Magic Clubhouse or something like that.
Screw Magic Clubhouse.
And so
screw
I read the Magic Clubhouse, kids. And I read all of those. And then she's looking at me, and she's like, what do you read at home? Because I was blowing through all these books. And I was like, well, we read Harry Potter every night. And she just looked at me, and she's like, okay, so none of the books I have here are going to work for you.
Yeah. Now, his favorite ones are the Slappy. Slappy the Ventriloquist Dummy. Those are his favorite ones. So, he loves it. We have his parent-teacher conference next week. It'll be interesting.
Killian's was the best.
Why?
Was so freaking hysterical. The teacher was rolling and laughing because of Killian's mannerisms. She's like, oh, he is such a charmer. He's such a love bug. He's just all this. And I was like, does he wink at you too? And she, like, started howling. And she's like, just today, we were sitting in the reading circle, and I was reading, and for some reason, I looked over at him, and we made eye contact, and he winked at me, and he blew a kiss. And she's like, he is such a flirt, and he does it to all the girls in class.
Oh, goodness.
And he'll wiggle his eyebrows at me if I walk by him. And I was like, that's my kid.
Oh, my.
And, you know, his obvious reading issues and all that. But other than that, he's, like, meeting in all other categories. And she's like, he's just the perfect little social butterfly, and everybody loves him. And I was like, that's Killian.
God. I don't know if this has been recording or not. I forgot to close out of Spotify, and when I plugged in the microphones, I wasn't paying attention, and it automatically plays when I plug in headphones.
We can check.
We'll be back, guys. Hopefully there's no Christmas music on the background.
That'd be beautiful.
All right, so we're good. It didn't record our Christmas music.
Dang, no Mariah Carey for you guys.
Excuse me, I listen to only Christmas classics, thank you very much.
So you listen to, oh god, I don't know who sings it.
I am Santa Claus.
I listen to rock Christmas music.
Oh, Trans-Siberian Orchestra. The rock, they do like...
It's like to the tune of Iron Man.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah.
Give him cookies and beer. He'll be back to house first next year.
Nope, not that.
Or Weird Al. I listen to Weird Al Christmas music.
Okay. So we want to get started?
Yes.
Okay.
Wherever we're...
So I'll start. I wanted to start with some things that I forgot to add into our Jeffrey Dahmer episode. So... just some little tidbits of information that I found. So, you remember how I told you that he was in the army?
Mm-hmm.
So, he was stationed in Germany, and he was a combat medic. And while he was stationed there, two soldiers came forward and said that Dahmer had raped them. But, you know how the military handles rape cases.
Yeah.
It was brushed under the rug, and he was only discharged for his alcoholism. It wasn't even put in his record that he...
That is so dumb. I hate that.
I agree.
Even now. It is still freaking glossed over and covered up. Like, the guy who raped my mom's best friend while she's in the Air Force and he's in the Air Force, they freaking still put him on the wall, like, of honor, even though he committed suicide right before his trial for raping her, and there was positive evidence and rape kits to prove it.
Mm-hmm.
And they're all like, well, because the charges didn't get to go through because he killed himself, he's still honorable. And she was at the ceremony and she's like, what the fuck?
Wow.
Oh, they still gloss over it to this day. All branches do it. And it is...
it's a problem.
Stupid.
It really is. He also admitted that in 1986, he saw an obituary in the newspaper for an 18-year-old male that had recently died. He went to the cemetery to try to dig up the body, but the ground was too hard, so he gave up.
Was it winter?
Probably. It's Wisconsin, so. On April 23rd, 1988, he attempted to kill another man at his grandmother's home. He brought the man home and drugged him, but before he could kill him, his grandmother had called for him. He realized that she had probably seen him bring the man home, so he couldn't just kill him. So as soon as the man passed out, he dropped him off at the local hospital. He also kept the head of Anthony Sears in his work locker at the chocolate factory. In May of 1990, he accidentally drugged himself. He drank the wrong drink, and when Dahmer had passed out, the man realized what was probably going to happen. So the man stole several items of clothing, $300, and a watch. But, for obvious reasons, neither Dahmer nor the guy reported it.
Don't drink the Kool-Aid!
When he lured Earl Lindsay to his home, he drilled a hole in his head while Earl was drugged. Mm. The only one that I touched on in our episode was...
the one who lived?
No, the 14-year-old boy.
Well, he lived initially and ran out and he brought him back,
yes,
he said?
Yes.
Yeah.
So
now he's the boy who lived in my mind.
But he didn't live.
Shh, don't mess with my Harry Potter references.
He poured hydrochloric acid into his brain, hoping it would damage it enough that Earl would be in a constant state of submission. But Earl woke up and complained of a headache. So Dahmer strangled him.
No shit. You think it'd be more of a migraine.
You would think. So Jeremiah Weinberger, he was the one that Dahmer kept in his bed for a few days before he killed, like, did anything to him. Mm-hmm. He also drilled a hole in Jeremiah's head, but instead of the hydrochloric acid, he twice injected boiling hot water into the hole. This put Jeremiah into a coma, and that's when he died 2 days later. He also had a sense of humor in prison.
Okay, this is morbid curiosity real quick. Does it say how big the holes are? Or are they tiny little...
I think it would be just the size of a drill bit.
They've got different drill bit sizes.
I think probably, like, I don't know how big that is.
Yeah, because I'm like, yeah, I don't know. Small.
Yeah.
like a pencil?
I think so.
Because when you originally said that about the 14-year-old, I was envisioning, like, the ones you use in drywall that are about...
Yeah.
Like...
A few inches.
Yeah, like the size of a prescription pill bottle. Mm-hmm. That's what I was envisioning, and I was like...
No. Oh. No, just a little thing.
Okay. Makes more sense, then. It's not as... a big open gashing wound that police could gloss over and not notice. Yeah. Okay.
So, in prison... He once told a guard, "I bite," just to get a reaction out of him. Just kind of, "I bite."
That'd be my humor.
He also shaped his food to look like human limbs, covered them in ketchup to look like blood, and then left them around the prison for the inmates to find. It's actually part of the reason why Christopher Scarver murdered him, because he was like, he showed no remorse. It was disgusting.
And here I am thinking that's freaking hysterical.
I know. That's what I was thinking.
I'm like, did he use meatloaf? Because that's freaking comical.
I think so.
That's like comedy gold. Oh, and that just makes me think of like Halloween when I was looking at meatloaf feet.
Yes. Yes.
Oh, I'm sick and twisted. I'm sorry, guys.
So, I'm going to get started on this week's episode. You're going to hate this one. But Nate recommended it, or requested it. I'm not showing you. He wanted Annabelle, but I couldn't do an actual story on Annabelle because there's not that much information.
Okay.
So we're doing haunted dolls.
Dolls are evil.
So, I mean, I do cover Annabelle. It's just her story's not very long. So...
Yeah, I was just at Value Village yesterday, and I was going down the aisles, and they had all their porcelain dolls on display mm-hmm. on the bottom shelf, and I was like, oh, heck no, keep walking.
So, I'm sure everybody has seen the movies. I know you haven't, but the actual Annabelle doll was not a creepy porcelain doll. It was a Raggedy Ann.
I don't like those either.
I don't either.
My mom has hers from a kid, like, childhood, and it's still ugly and scary.
My older sister... When I told her about Annabelle being a Raggedy Ann doll, she was like, are you kidding me? Her mom collects Raggedy Ann and Raggedy Andy, her adopted mom. And when she moved out, her mom turned her entire bedroom into her display case.
You know, Chucky killed me for most dolls, and then what killed me for every single doll after that, like even Barbies freak me out. Fucking Cabbage Patch Kids. Cabbage Patch Kids scare the ever-living crap out of me. I don't know why. They're just...
Mm-hmm.
Eyes.
The movie Annabelle, all of the Annabelle movies also were not very... They had a very tiny snippet of how the doll actually... Like, the actual story. Mm-hmm. And the rest of it was all completely fabricated. So
it was a pretty straightforward story.
No.
Because I thought it was just like, it was actually like a neighbor who possessed the doll and she murdered someone.
Nope. Huh. That never happened. The closest thing that they filmed that actually had to do with the real Annabelle doll in any of the movies was the very beginning of the Conjuring movie when the girls are talking to Ed and Lorraine Warren. But that was at the very end of their story. So it starts in 1970 when a mother came across a very large Raggedy Ann doll in a hobby shop. She then gave it to her adult nurse daughter, Donna, on her 28th birthday. It was likely new, as the style of dress on the Raggedy Ann did not predate 1970. Things immediately started in the apartment that Donna shared with her friend and fellow nurse, Angie, and Angie's fiancé, Lou. First, Donna noticed that she would put the doll on her bed, but find it in different positions, such as her a leg being crossed or laying on its side. Then the girls began to find parchment paper throughout their apartment. Many would have writing scrawled on them with messages such as, "Help me," or "Help Lou." The girls then started finding the doll in not just different positions, but also different rooms altogether. At one point, the doll even began to leak what appeared to be blood. So when Donna found it, it had blood droplets on its hand, and I think on its face or chest. I can't quite remember that detail very well. The girls originally thought that someone was coming into their home and moving the doll to mess with them, but as the incidents grew more terrifying, the girls decided to reach out to a psychic who conducted a seance. The psychic told the girls that a young girl about 7 years old named Annabelle Higgins had died on the property before their apartments were built.
And what year was this?
1970.
Oh, so they didn't really have DNA testing for blood droplets.
She said that the girl felt comforted by living with the girls and wanted to be loved, or wanted to stay with them and be loved. This occurred just 4 to 6 weeks after Donna was given the doll. Due to Angie and Donna being nurses, their compassion led to the girls allowing Annabelle to live in the doll. That's when things started to take a turn for the worst. So one night, Lou decided to take a nap. He woke up realizing that he couldn't move with Annabelle at his feet. He watched as the doll glided up his body and began to strangle him until he blacked out. When he woke up the next day, he was certain that he wasn't just experiencing sleep paralysis, but that Annabelle had really tried to kill him.
Did he have strangulation? Well, I guess it's a doll.
On a later date, Lou had planned to take a road trip the night before he left. He and Angie were looking over maps in preparation. They began to hear rustling coming from Donna's room, so Lou went to go check it out. He waited for the rustling to stop before walking in to Donna's room. Annabelle was laying on the floor in a corner. As he walked in, he began to get the sensation that someone was behind him. When he turned around, he realized that no one was there. All of a sudden, he felt this severe pain in his chest, doubling him over, and began bleeding. The couple found 7 deep scratches, 4 horizontal and 3 vertical. However, after 2 days, the scratches had completely healed. At this point, it had been about a year since Donna had gotten the doll. Donna contacted Episcopal priest Father Hegan, who contacted Superior Father Cook, who called Ed and Lorraine Warren. The Warrens were able to convince Father Cook to perform an exorcism and cleanse the apartment.
They're in a lot of movies.
They're turning a bunch of Ed and Lorraine's stuff into movies.
Because didn't they collect a lot of...
I am going to get there.
Okay.
So Ed informed the girls that they were naive to allow this spirit to inhabit the doll. Spirits don't live in dolls. They had been duped into allowing a demon to stay in their home. If they didn't take care of the situation right away, eventually the demon would move from the doll to them. The girls allowed Ed and Lorraine to take the doll home with them. They placed the doll in a blessed glass case in their occult museum that the Warrens operated in their house. Outside the glass case hangs a sign today that says, "Warning, positively do not open." The doll is still in the Warren family, however, the occult museum is currently closed due to zoning regulations, and they are looking for a new location. It should be noted, though, that this is all from Lorraine's writings in the Demonologist book. Literally, it's called The Demonologist. But in a 1980s video tour of their occult museum, Ed stated that Annabelle died in a car wreck outside the apartments, that Annabelle was 6 instead of 7, and that Donna's mom gave her the doll on Christmas instead of her birthday. So the story changed quite a bit. There is one death supposedly linked to Annabelle. According to Ed, a young man came to the occult museum on a motorcycle with his girlfriend. While Ed was giving him the tour, the man ran up to the case, tapping it, taunting the doll to scratch him like it had done to Lou. Ed kicked him and his girlfriend out, and about 3 hours later, the man lost control of his motorcycle and hit a tree. The man died, but his girlfriend survived. However, she spent over a year in the hospital.
Wow.
But believe it or not, there is a more terrifying doll out there. In the 1960s, a 6-year-old, not 1960s, in 1906, a 6-year-old boy named Robert Eugene Otto was gifted a 3-foot-tall cloth and straw-filled doll dressed as a sailor.
This is the one with the creepy face.
Yes, it is. Eugene Otto ended up becoming a very famous painter. So, it's a mystery how Eugene got Robert the doll. One story says that the family maid, a young girl from the Bahamas, infused the doll with voodoo magic and gave it to Eugene as retaliation for some wrongdoing that she may have been punished for. But the more likely story was that Eugene's grandfather purchased the doll in Germany and gave it to his grandson. Eugene immediately fell in love with the doll. He often dressed him in children's clothing, mainly the sailor doll that Eugene had worn as a baby, and took him everywhere with him. He would even talk to and about the doll as if it was a real person. He even asked his parents to make Robert his own bedroom in the attic, complete with furniture the doll's size. But just like with Annabelle, weird things began to occur. Things began to move on their own, with Eugene frequently blaming Robert. Jean would often have loud fights with Robert, a deep voice seeming to emanate from the doll. Staff would often quit suddenly due to the frightening events. Eugene began asking his parents to call him Jean. When his mother asked why, Jean said, because Robert said so. Sometimes furniture was broken or glassware, all blamed on Robert. When the family moved to France, Robert was left behind, nailed inside a box in the attic. Eugene studied at the Academy of Fine Arts in Chicago, the Art Students League in New York, and the Parisian Sorbonne in Paris. While at the Parisian Sorbonne, he met his wife, Anne. Robert was completely forgotten. Eugene ended up moving back into his child home at 534 Eaton Street in Key West. However, as soon as Eugene found the doll again, he began to play with it. His wife reported that at night, she would sometimes hear Jean talking to Robert, laughing at the doll's jokes. Eventually, he even told Anne that Robert was the man of the house, so he needed to be seated at the head of the table and served first. Many people would walk past the house and see Robert sitting in a chair in front of the window. One day, a plumber came to the house for repairs. He claimed he heard children's laughter, but knew that Jean was not home. When he searched the room that he had heard the laughter in, he found Robert on the complete opposite side of the room where he previously was. So he saw Robert sitting in the chair in front of the window when he got to the house. He also saw toys that had been in Robert's lap on the floor as if Robert had thrown them. It got to a point where people would often avoid walking in front of the house because it always felt as if Robert's eyes were following them. Visitors would often report that they would hear footsteps in the attic, and things would move around the house. In 1974, Jean died. It's reported that he was found in the attic with Robert on top of him, his hands around Jean's neck. After his death, Anne leased the house out and moved back to France, leaving Robert in the attic. Her only stipulation in her lease was that Robert be the only occupant of the attic. Myrtle Reuter eventually purchased the home with Robert included. In the 1980s, Myrtle moved, taking Robert with her. She lived with Robert for about 20 years, and would move inexplicably the entire time. One morning, she woke up to Robert in her room, sitting on a kitchen knife. As a result, Myrtle donated Robert to the Fort East Martello Museum, where he remains to this day. Staff at the museum have denied that Robert can still be found in different positions in his case. Footsteps have been heard throughout the museum at night when no one else is there. Robert's expressions have even been noticed to change from neutral to angry in the blink of an eye. The museum tells visitors tells the visitors of Robert's exhibit to be polite to him, treat him with respect, and ask him for permission if they want to take his photo, or else bad things will happen. Many people have claimed that they have experienced misfortune, accidents, relationships ending, disease, and even death. As a result, Robert's case is full of letters begging for his forgiveness. There are over 1,000 letters that the museum keeps in a catalog for future reference. Whether he is truly alive, the doll is definitely creepy, with its beady eyes and small holes in his face. He was even the inspiration for the Child's Play movies. So, your good old friend Chucky. I didn't know that, actually, until last night when I was doing my research.
It makes sense, because he's got such a creepy face.
He does.
Like, I don't know how any child, regardless of the era, could even find that face remotely lovable.
I don't know.
Because that is a... It looks like one of those, like, early 1900s Halloween masks
that
kids would make. It's freaking just a weird face.
It does. And those small holes on his face even look like they're scars. So, here's another case. In 1991, a 90-year-old porcelain doll was donated to the Quesnel and District Museum in British Columbia, Canada. The woman who donated her told the curator that the doll was getting old and too fragile. She was worried her daughter would play with it and damage it further. The doll was named Mandy and belonged to her grandmother, but she seemed anxious to be rid of the family heirloom. As soon as the curator held the doll, she immediately felt uneasy. She took the doll straight to the museum's workroom to have some maintenance done before being displayed. Mandy was placed in a plastic bag to check for any bug infestations. The plastic bag just made her even more creepy. Those working in the maintenance room swore that the bag seemed to rustle as if she was moving. Upon further investigation, the doll had moved position, but was free of bugs, so it couldn't be blamed on bugs. When maintenance was complete, she was photographed to be added to the museum's record book. She was left in the lab overnight, but when the staff returned the next day, smaller objects were thrown across the room. Larger objects were just tipped over on their side. This continued every time the doll was left out. The curator described it as what a child throwing a temper tantrum would do. After Mandy was placed in her case at the front of the museum, visitors would often complain about an uneasiness as they passed her case. Sometimes photos of her would not turn out. Eventually, she started being moved further and further back in the museum, so that way she'd be, like, the last thing you would see.
Mm-hmm.
Psychics started asking to hold the doll, and were finally able to come up with a backstory for her, so I'm gonna read you the backstory. It was really long, and I didn't want to write it all out. My hand was cramping. So... No, yeah, that's Mandy. Porcelain doll.
Why are dolls so freaking ugly?
So, a man was walking past the farmhouse when he thought he heard some crying coming from within. The odd part about this child's cry was that the passerby knew the farmhouse to have been empty, abandoned, so no child should have been present. He walked up the driveway and knocked on the door. No answer. The crying continued, so he had a look around. He entered the empty farmhouse and discovered the crying coming from below his feet. Not knowing how to access the building's cellar from the inside, he went back outside to find the external entrance. As he opened the storm doors, light illuminated the room, and he made a shocking discovery. The body of a young girl, long dead, lay on the floor, a doll held in her arms.
Aww.
It is not known why the girl was in the cellar in the first place, whether it was an accident or as some form of crime/punishment. Regardless, it is believed that when she died, her spirit decided to inhabit the doll. A horrible story, and no doubt a story you may not believe, but there is a link between some of the aspects of the doll's origin and the woman who had donated it to the museum. When strange events surrounding the doll had started to take place at the museum, the curator decided to visit the doll's previous owner. It was here she learned the truth. The owner had not donated the doll for fear of her daughter breaking it. If that was the sole reason, then she would have just placed the doll in a box and out of reach. No, the real reason was that when the doll was in her house, the woman could hear a crying coming from the cellar. When she would investigate to find the source of the sound, she would find nobody there. The cellar's windows would be open and the doll on the floor. When this began to happen more frequently, she decided to get rid of it and donated it to the Quesnel and District Museum. So, that was from theparanormalguide.com. But, I mean, it's her face is all cracked. She's wearing an old-style dress. And she's just really creepy.
Like, that is a really, really good face. I'm not gonna lie. Like, in terms of dolls, for how old it is.
Yeah.
That's a very nice face. And it looks more realistic than a lot of dolls from that time.
I agree.
But it's still a doll.
Yeah. It's still really creepy looking. So, I didn't realize how prevalent haunted dolls were. I always read stories, you know, of people buying haunted dolls off eBay. So I decided to check it out myself. There weren't as many as I was expecting. When I first searched it, it came up with over 2,000 results. But as I was scrolling through, they were all like Halloween decorations or living dead dolls and stuff like that. So I ended up typing in haunted doll reel, and it came up with 30 results. They're all bid only, so there's no, like, actual price point on them that I could get, but all of the listings said that they all had either good or positive or neutral energies attached to it, and I'm like, no, mm-mm. I agree with Ed and Lorraine Warren that dolls, people don't haunt things, they haunt people. And it's just creepy. And I think
it would depend. Like, the doll one, that last one, that kind of makes sense if the little girl was found clutching the doll and her spirit had nothing else to attach to. Because it's not just gonna hang out in the cellar where it's alone. If there's something warm, a light it can radiate to.
But why would people be getting an uneasy, creepy feeling from it?
I get that with any doll, though. Let's see. I don't know.
I don't know. There was another one that I had found, but I didn't really write much on it because my hand, like I said, my hand was cramping. And I had already written 10 pages of notes. But there was another one. I think it was China. This little girl was given a doll. So back in the old days, when you'd get a doll, it would be made in your likeness. And a lot of times it would have your hair. They would cut some of your hair off and then sew it onto the doll. This doll, after the little girl had died, the doll stayed in her family, but the hair continued to grow on it. Supposedly. I've never seen any proof of it, but...
You know, I know which one that is, but... I always wondered, because I never researched it that much, I'm wondering, but that wouldn't make sense. They wouldn't pluck the girl's hair out at the root.
No.
Because I know if you still have the root completely intact, it can continue to grow. That's why hair and nails grow after you die. They don't stop because...
Well, I was told that your skin is like receding. And that's, it gives the appearance that they're growing, but they're not actually growing. Because they have to have constant cellular growth in order to grow.
Well, yeah. I would assume at one point it stops, but, like, the nails, the reason why those keep growing is it's because it's pushing the dead cells out.
I guess that makes sense.
I don't know how that works for hair, but for the nails, that's why they keep growing. And it's the same for, like, issues with teeth when you die. It's a really strange phenomenon. It's really weird.
Yeah.
No one's burying me. I don't know. I just... The thought of
decomposing and bugs getting in a casket.
No.
That's eerie and nasty and ucky to me. Yeah, that's my word for it, ucky. And, no, I'm getting burned.
Yeah, that's how I feel. That and it's cheaper to cremate than to buy a casket, buy a plot of land, all of that. So, not to mention my biggest fear, too, is what's the point in buying a plot of land in a cemetery if we see it all the time, them moving cemeteries.
Yeah.
And a lot of times they don't take all of the bodies. So why am I paying an exorbitant amount of money for a plot of land that's eventually I'm not even going to be buried in?
Yeah, no, what's weird, one of the things that, like, I didn't understand as a kid, and I still do not understand to this day, is why my parents chose to bury my brother after he was cremated.
We did that with my memes.
It's just a strange concept to me, but it's like the only rational reason for them choosing to bury him was he wanted to be a kindergarten teacher, and he loved the outdoors, and he wanted to join the military before becoming a kindergarten teacher to see the world and go hiking various places all over the world. So he was buried by the Bolin Pitcher, and it's overlooking all of that hiking area.
Mm-hmm.
And he is literally like three rows away from the infants and the small children.
Nice.
And so they buried him there specifically for that reason, so he could always be around children and he could overlook nature.
Mm-hmm.
And like
that other... sounded kind of creepy. So he could be so he can always be around children.
Yeah, it's a. God dang it. Again, with my creepiness without meaning to. Yeah, no, but if, like, anyone had met him, they'd know. Like, Joel was very much... He's like Mickey is with Izzy.
Mm-hmm.
He loves...
Very nurturing.
He was a very nurturing individual. And he loved children, and he loved being around them, and he loved helping with them, and he worked in the daycare that North Central High School used to have. I don't know if they still have it, but they had a child care in there. And so students could go check on their younger siblings that weren't school age or their own children.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a really nice program, and he loved taking that elective because it was technically an elective, and they just kept letting him take it.
He would have loved our child development class then. Because mm-hmm. With our child development class, if you took it for the second year, so if you took child development 2 through 4, you got to volunteer at like daycares and stuff.
Oh, nice.
I volunteered at the old U High. I was in the special needs preschool class.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, it was great.
Yeah, no, I think that's why I like Joel so much, too, because at that point in my life, when I moved back in with my mom and her new husband and all the boys and stuff,
mm-hmm.
nobody would, like, interact with me because they were scared of, like, traumatizing me further, because it was only a few months before it came out about
mm-hmm.
the abuse and the rape and all that, and so they were, like, all terrified of getting close to me. Like, they were absolutely terrified they'd set me off or something.
Mm-hmm.
And Joel was the only one who treated me like a normal kid.
That's good.
Like a person, and that's why I connected with him so quickly and so easily, and it's like easy to understand because of his personality, like
mm-hmm.
and he also had a shoddy upbringing and a drug addict for a mom and all that stuff, and he just wanted kids to...
So he was your stepbrother?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. This whole time I thought he was your birth brother.
No, I have one half brother, and
that's Shane.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, no, but Joel's my brother.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he wanted all children to feel loved and safe, even if they don't feel safe in their own homes.
Mm-hmm.
And that was his major drive for wanting to be around children and provide better futures and a safety net for them, so they always had somewhere to feel loved and safe.
Aww. I would have liked him, I think.
And that's why I get so pissed. Even now, my mom still describes it as, well, God called him home early because he was too good for this world. And I was like, and that sets me off. I'm like, fuck you.
No.
That ticks me off when people say that only the good die young and God called him home. And I'm like, no, that is bullcrap.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
His unnatural forces in that disgusting house that killed him. Luckily, there was no dolls. Those dolls would have been possessed so quick.
I'm sure they would have. All right. We want to take a break before your
yes. part?
All right.
All right. So what are you doing this week?
So I'm doing a bunch of California crimes and legends because we are moving to California in 3 months. So I figured, why not brush up on my local horror? Okay. Also, side note, when you come to visit me down there sometime, we're going to make a little side road trip and go see the Death Museum.
Yes. Absolutely, yes.
That's, like, the only thing I'm really excited for besides Legoland. Like, I really want to go to Legoland, so. So, my first one is the Dark Watchers. So, this legend takes us to the Santa Lucia Mountains, which run from Avila Beach to Monterey. The Dark Watchers are said to be giant, human-like phantoms that lurk inside these eerie mountains. The legend goes that the Dark Watchers can only be seen at twilight, as they stand at the Santa Lucia mountain tops. They've only been claimed to be seen staring out into the vast space below the mountains before completely vanishing. These ghostly figures first emerged in Chumash Indian history and lore. The cave walls were donned with drawings by the Chumash that depicted these phantoms. The Dark Watchers made an appearance in author John Steinbeck's story Flight, where these creatures were described as dark forms against the sky. More recent sightings came in the 1960s by a Monterey High School principal. Now the legend of the Dark Watchers has evolved so they're more like human-like ghosts wearing dark capes and hats.
Ooh.
So when they say the dark capes and hats, like, what I kept envisioning was, like, Zorro capes. Like, that's all I'm seeing is, like, Zorro capes and big, wide-brim black hats, and I'm like,
yeah. Oh.
I love Zorro, not gonna lie.
Okay, so what's your next story?
The next one is the Monster of Elizabeth Lake. One of the multiple Elizabeth Lake locations throughout California is said to carry an evil presence just below the water surface. The Elizabeth Lake, just outside of Lancaster and Los Angeles, is said to have been created by the devil himself. I notice everything in California is related to the devil making it.
I know.
But for keeping his hellish pets. The urban legend continues to state that a passageway to hell can be found if you swim deep enough into the lake. The first sighting of the Monster of Elizabeth Lake dates back to 1880. The monster is said to have the neck of a giraffe, the head of a bulldog, bat wings, and an estimated 50 feet long, and it smells of rancid decay. For the next century, sightings of the Monster of Elizabeth Lake would continue to be reported and strike fear into the locals' hearts. The locals would be so scared that the landowners would actually sell or completely abandon their property. Also, attempts to build on the lake's land came to no avail. At night, residents could hear awful screams from the lake and would have terrible visions. Farm animals would disappear, and sightings of a flying winged creature was reported to be seen or overhead. Ranchers in the 1800s have even tried to capture the beast, with one of the legends saying that a group of them did, in fact, kill the monster. But any proof that the creature's existence or death has yet to be discovered. There is a picture that they can't explain, but they also can't 100% say, because there's no way to edit those photos.
Mm-hmm.
But there is a photograph, and they say there's no way to describe or verify the picture.
Okay, so it's underneath the water.
It just lives in the lake.
How does it fly? How is it swimming if it's got wings?
Well, they've got flying fish.
But they're not really flying fish. They're just fish that jump out of the
Maybe
water.
Maybe this just jumps out of the water and only...
just skips the skips the water like a stone.
That would be beautiful.
That would be so awesome.
I'm not really sure. Maybe it goes above water, opens its wings, and uses them to sail around the lake. I don't know. It's an
I mean, I guess I could see how it could swim with them being bat wings. I guess, you know, really good, like,
yeah, like flippers. Like duck feet.
That too. I was thinking of the things we wear when we go swimming.
I call them duck feet too.
Oh.
Because they look like little duck feet.
The fins. That's what it was. Foot fins. But still, that's weird. It's got, it doesn't have gills. So how's it breathe underwater?
It's got that giraffe neck, yo. Probably just looks like a dog swimming and then the neck comes up.
Can you imagine swimming and being like, oh, look at the cute little, nope.
That would be me too. Nope, time to go, kids. Ooh, it's a weird messy.
That's actually what I was thinking. Because I was like, well, I mean, it sounds kind of like Nessie. Wait, no, it's got a dog head. Never mind. And wings. Nessie did not. Nessie's just a dinosaur. Anyways.
That's way funnier than it should have been. So the next one's a Turnbull Canyon hauntings. I know I've covered the Turnbull Canyon before and multiple legends associated with it.
I was going to say, this sounds really familiar.
Yeah, a lot of them are just, like, rehashing a few we've covered here and there. Death is said to reside within this hiking canyon in the
Punta
Hills Preserve near Whittier. Turnbull Canyon, once referred to, but referred by the Gabrielino. Yeah. The Gabrielino Indians as Hootenuga, or the place of the devil. The legend talks about the whole region being haunted by Indians who were murdered for not converting to Catholicism. Their spirits are believed to be lingering in unrest in the canyon. Years later, Turnbull Canyon would be the site of numerous satanic rituals held by a cult, attempting to conjure demons and even Satan himself. Often by sacrificing children from the nearby orphanages, the sinister cult suddenly vanished one night, never to be seen again. What was left behind in their wake were paranormal sightings and occurrences being reported by hikers and locals, claiming to see hooded figures, hellish creatures, and mutilated children. More mysterious deaths have occurred in Turnbull Canyon since its dark history began. A teenager was electrocuted while exploring the ruins of the old asylum in the canyon, and a plane also crashed here in 1978, taking 29 lives. That's the one I told you where the plane crashed with all the children on it.
Yeah.
So there's the children. I know I talked about the kid getting electrocuted before.
You talked about the orphanage.
Yeah, I talked about the orphanage, and I know I talked about the occult people.
You also talked about the natives, too.
Yeah, and I also talked about the gates of hell are located there, too,
mm-hmm.
because they took the gates down or whatever, and all that remained was, like, the burned house, the remains of the burned house.
But I can't find any of that online.
And it's so weird, because so many people come back to those exact same stories, you think it would.
Yeah, I wonder if you can possibly find it, because I sure as hell can't.
Okay. The next one is the ghost of Stowe Lake. San Francisco's Golden Gate Park is home to one of the city's most famous ghosts. Stowe Lake is said to be haunted by the spirit of a woman who, after attempting to save her child, fell in the water and drowned in the lake. The legend goes that this woman, referred to as the White Lady, there's so many white ladies in haunting stories, wanders the edge of Stowe Lake as she searches for her baby. She can even be summoned by visitors. It's said that the most active area surrounding the lake is near the Pioneer Women and Children's statue. Brave ghost seekers can summon the woman by calling out, white lady, I have your baby, 3 times. If she believes you, the woman will appear before you and will ask for her baby back. The legend warns both skeptics and believers from doing this, because if you tell her you have her baby, the woman will haunt you for the rest of your life. If you tell the woman you don't have her baby after summoning her, the legend says she'll drag you into the lake and give you the same watery death that she'd suffered.
So the thing with the white lady is ladies in white are women who drown their children and then kill themselves. So if she's really a lady in white, she probably wasn't attempting to save her baby. She probably killed her baby herself.
And then realized what she did, and she's like, mm-hmm. ah, sheesh.
Yep. Oh, I love this one.
The Hollywood Sign Spirit. This is the first time I heard about this.
Oh, yeah. I was actually planning on doing an episode on this.
So, probably one of the most infamous urban legends in California is the sign is said to be haunted by the early 1900s actress Peg Entwistle.
Mm-hmm.
When a possibly career-ending review was published about one of her films. Entwistle climbed to the top of the sign's H and threw herself off of it. She is now called the Lady in White. See? Right? Everyone's apparently the Lady in White these days. And is said to haunt the sign and the surrounding area. The legend continues to state that the Lady in White will appear to people hiking to the off-limits part of the sign where she'd killed herself. Instead of the beautiful Hollywood actress, what appears to these unfortunate people is a woman with a skeletal face, deep hollowed-out eyes. And if the hikers are alone, the Lady in White somehow influences them to share her own fate. Many Hollywood sign suicides have been reported in the century following Entwistle's suicide, and in 2012, a man's decapitated head and mutilated body parts were found right by where Entwistle killed herself.
Wow.
The Fresno Nightcrawler. In the late 90s and early 2000s, reports of a strange cryptid walking around Fresno, California at night began popping up. Evidence was patchy at best. However, in 2007, surveillance footage revealed a biped with two long legs and a small head walking through Fresno. Through a Fresno resident's front yard. The Sci-Fi Network show Fact or Faked Paranormal Files even included the Fresno Nightcrawler in one of their episodes, and the footage was deemed unexplainable.
I actually saw that episode. It was amazing. I loved it. I was not expecting that.
I was going to look up the footage tonight. And
they think it's an alien. That's the theory, is it's some kind of alien.
Okay. Well, I guess it'll depend on the footage of what I see.
Oh, you're in for a treat. I'll show you when we're done.
So the next one is the Billywack Monster. I just like saying that word, Billywack. It's I'm probably gonna add it to my collection, like Garfunkeled and Fushnookud.
Ishy swishy.
Ishy swishy sauce. By the way, that's Worcestershire sauce. It's just what we call it. Ishy swishy. I have a fun collection of words that I like to use. Rumors of an alleged beast have been swirling since the 1940s. At the site of the former Billywack Dairy in Ventura County, August Rubel, a German national living in the United States during World War II, owned the dairy. It was rumored that Rubel had a secret underground lab beneath the dairy, where he was working with the U.S. government to build a super soldier for warfare. He returned to his native country, Germany, in 1943, a dangerous journey considering he was supposedly working for the Allies. During the trip, Rubel was allegedly killed by a German landmine. Years later, reports of a strange creature roaming the area where the now abandoned dairy stood started to surface. Many of these reports came from local high school students who told police that a large humanoid with goat-like horns and sharp claws was hurling rocks at their car. In 1964, hikers reported that they were terrorized by a creature fitting the same description of the Billywack Monster.
Hmm.
I just think it's funny that a lot of these creatures always sound like, oh gosh, why am I drawing a blank on this? They all have goat heads.
Baphomet?
Yes, there we go. My brain has been so scattered this week, guys. Like, I opened the cupboard looking for Kool-Aid. I walked into the bathroom looking for chicken. I went into the basement looking for French fries, and they were in the outside freezer. Like, I've just been walking around the house, walking into the wrong rooms, and looking in the wrong places for very obvious items. Like, my brain is gone.
Speaking of Baphomet, I just finished Sabrina.
Oh.
I finally finished it. I'm so excited for the next season.
Right? I told you it was good.
Mm-hmm. I started Riverdale, too. And I actually really like it. The first time I watched it, I couldn't get into it. And we're watching Nancy Drew as well, which takes place in the same universe.
I like Sabrina. I like The Masquerade.
Mm-hmm.
The Phantom of the Opera Masquerade. It's just like,
mm-hmm. Oh. Anyways.
Sorry, guys. Geeked out for a second. So, the next one is The Charman.
Is he a Charmander?
Ooh.
I think I know this one, actually, though.
Several spirits are said to haunt the bridge that crosses San Antonio Creek in Ojai? I'm going with Ojai, California, but the Charman is the most famous. In fact, the bridge has been dubbed Charman Bridge. The Charman is a spirit that appears burnt beyond recognition and is said to emerge from the forest to attack motorists, especially those who stop on the bridge, get out of their cars, and yell, "Help me." There are a few different theories that,
pause it.
Sorry, I was having a throat thing.
Oh, okay. I thought you were trying to figure out how to pronounce the word you wrote.
No, my, I dry throat. I don't even think I wrote the right word there. Of possibly how the Charman came to be. Two of which trace the Charman's origins to a 1948 brush fire in the Ojai Valley. In one, a father and son were caught in the fire. The father perished before help could arrive, and his son fled to the woods and went insane from his injuries, becoming the Charman. In another, a husband and wife were trapped in the fire, and the wife couldn't escape. The husband heard her yelling, "Help me," but couldn't come to her rescue in time. He became the Charman. Another story describes a car fire on what's now the Charman Bridge. The driver was severely burned and barely survived, but he fled into the woods where he became the Charman.
I'm sorry, if you're burnt behind beyond recognition, you're not going to survive for very long.
Yeah, not without medical
intervention. Infection is so freaking high.
Yeah. And actually, one of the things I found out when I was taking my first aid course for the NAC class was, if you have a bad burn, something that you can do to immediately help the person who's been burned, go grab your eggs and crack
the membrane.
The egg whites.
Oh, I heard it was the membrane. You peel the membrane off the inside of the egg and it creates like a bandage.
Yeah, you can put a barrier over it, but the egg whites have healing properties as well. And so if you slather the egg whites on there, it'll help them and help them recover faster.
I would think that it would start to cook.
Well, I suppose if they're still hot, yeah. That'd be weird.
Oh, I've got a sick mind. Now I'm just imagining egg whites frying on some poor dude.
Oh, man.
Oh.
And so this one, I just titled The Hotel Death Water, but Kelly's covered it. So many aspects of the story sound like an urban legend, but it's all true. In 2013, guests staying at the Cecil Hotel in Los Angeles reported their water was a dark color and, you know, they had, like you said, the smell and the taste.
Yeah, it tasted funny, sickeningly sweet. It was, had poor water pressure and it smelt musty. But yeah, it was gross.
Yeah. So the hotel sent a maintenance man to fix it and it turns out the problem was a human corpse in the water tank, which had been decomposing for weeks. The body belonged to Elisa Lamb, and the police never figured out who killed her or whether she killed herself. But wait, it gets creepier. If you guys listen to our...
Yeah, if you listen to our very first episode, I did a very long episode on Elisa Lamb and the entire case of what happened, all of the theories, and I highly recommend you go listen to the first episode.
And so when police looked at the security tapes of the elevator on the suspected day of Lamb's death, they saw the victim acting strangely. She got in the elevator, pressed a bunch of buttons, and peered out when the door opened as if looking for someone. She looked terrified the entire time, and when she finally left, the doors of the elevator opened and closed a second time, as if someone else was there, but unseen.
Well, so when she got in the elevator, it didn't close for almost 4 minutes.
Yeah, that's why she was peering out and mm-hmm. trying to figure out what was going on.
Yeah.
And so, like, was she being followed, or was Lamb diagnosed as a was, oh my gosh, I worded this so weird, I'm sorry guys, but, or was Lam being diagnosed as bipolar and depressive, having, and was she having an episode that could have been a reaction? I worded that so weird, I was like, shorthand, messing, typing through this.
Okay, so was Lam being followed, or was she having some kind of mental health episode that related to her health issues?
What she said. I was trying to eat dinner while typing the last of this, so. We may never know, though. So, something else creepy was her blog continued to update after she died. It's possible that she had posts in her queue scheduled to publish. But still, some suggest Lam had tuberculosis and pointed out that the test used to determine whether someone has TB is called Lamalisa.
So, what that was, it was, there was an experimental drug trial going on near the Cecil Hotel called Lamalisa, but the autopsy showed that she did not have any evidence of tuberculosis whatsoever.
Yeah. So, I just tried to condense that, because like I said, she's covered it before, and it's, like I said, I'm just covering California things,
mm-hmm.
preparing for all my spooky encounters for when we move. The next one, we'll cover this one later, because this is one of my favorite. Like, it's weird to say that, I guess. But this is one of my favorite cases. The Black Dahlia. On the morning of January 15th, 1947, police in Los Angeles made a horrifying discovery. A woman was sliced cleanly in half at the waist, posed so that onlookers thought she was just a mannequin and not a human. The murder victims I identified as Elizabeth Short was a young actress, and the public became so entranced with the murder, they had nicknamed her the Black Dahlia. A massive manhunt ensued, but no one was ever charged, and the murder remains unsolved. And, like, there is a lot of guesses as to who it was and why they did it, but I'm not going to go into that, because we're going to cover that later. That's a huge, huge, huge case.
Yes, it is.
And I love her so much. She was even... before she was killed, she was a beautiful woman.
She was.
And,
Ghost Adventures actually just did an episode at the person that they suspect was the killer. They did an episode of his house because he died. And his daughters thought that the house was haunted by him.
Was it the dentist?
I think he was a dentist, yeah.
Because that was, like, I think that was the number one best suspect was the dentist.
Yeah, he was some kind of doctor.
Yeah, and I think another, like, actual story that they covered a possibility of the dentist being the one, because, like, they said he had drugged her, raped her, she died from an overdose, and they went into all those possibilities.
And see, they made a movie about that. I thought it was that she was, she went to him for an illegal abortion. But she was last seen alive at the Cecil Hotel where Alyssa Lam was.
Yep.
And it's also where the Night Stalker stayed. Not the original Night Stalker, Robert Ramirez. The original Night Stalker was somebody else. I gotta figure out who that was. Who was the original...
Night yeah, Stalker. But like they just said, that one movie was just a what-if scenario that someone had made up, and they made, like, a little B-film about it.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a really good one. I'll have to look it up and look up and see if it what they actually titled it. But there's a lot of, like, related stories and what-ifs, because there was a few leads.
Yeah, there was a lot.
And I think, like, even at one point, they were questioning her father.
Probably.
So the next one is the Zodiac Killer. The Zodiac...
I love this one.
Yeah, the Zodiac Killer is one of the most notorious murderers in the United States history, and Northern California was his hunting ground. In the late 60s, the bodies of two teenagers were discovered in...
Vallejo.
That's what I was going with. Vallejo. Shot to death, the police received a threat letter and a coded message. At least 5 murders have been attributed to the so-called Zodiac Killer. Notes continued to arrive with weird, unknown codes even the experts couldn't crack. and no amount of investigation produced enough clues to charge anyone. Many people have been accused of being the Zodiac Killer over the years, but he's never been identified, and some of his mysterious coded messages have never been recorded. While he stopped killing long ago, there's no promise he's done for good, which might make you reconsider walking alone at night in the Bay Area hills. Which, when you think about it, if it was in the 60s, he's probably too old to be out there doing his thing unless he's, like, training someone else.
Mm-hmm. So I searched the original Night Stalker, and they caught him, and he was an ex-cop. He was also the Golden State Killer. They just recently caught him in April of this year. Oh, last year. April last year.
Yeah, I remember seeing his picture floating around.
Yeah, he was the original Night Stalker and the Golden State Killer.
So the next one, I'm not sure if this is Bodhi or Bodhi, but I'm thinking it's Bodhi since it's got an IE. I'm going with Bodhi, so if I'm wrong, I'm sorry. So where to even begin? This ghost town, it's really cool. It's really cool. I was looking up pictures, and this is a trip I'm making, because there's no way I'm not going.
Mm-hmm.
This is a ghost town and one of the best-preserved Old West outposts, a historic landmark, and a museum. Because so much of it is preserved, Bodhi has plenty of legends and ghosts who call the place home. There's the Angel of Bodhi, a little girl who haunts her gravesite, ghostly miners who protect their claims or visiting, like, you can see him walking into the prospecting office. And just about every building in town has a ghostly tale of its own. To top it all off, the place is supposedly cursed. If you take anything out of Bodhi as a souvenir, which is illegal, by the way, you'll be cursed with bad luck in everything you try to do. There's even a book in the museum office of letters from people who have returned items in the hopes of lifting the curse. And then the last one for the night, Route 66. Route 66 in California is a favorite road trip route with classic hotels and tourist traps along the way. It really is. Like, I've been on Route 66 as a kid during a family road trip, and I freaking loved it. There were so many places to stop and sightsee and just do weird things.
Aww.
And I'm definitely doing it with the kids. Even with all that going for it, there's still one stretch of the road in Pasadena that isn't a place you want to stop. The Colorado Street Bridge has been around since 1912, and the first time someone jumped from it to commit suicide was in 1919. Since then, there have been at least 100 suicides on the bridge. With suicides come ghosts, and some say the ghosts pressure people to jump as they walk along the bridge.
Huh. So are you guys road tripping down to California then?
Well, I'm driving down.
Okay.
I'm bringing the kids with me. We're not sure about Dylan's car or what's going to be going on with that or how things are going, but he comes back because he gets sent back by the military.
Mm-hmm.
And then he's personally got 6 days to pack what he needs and be down at the base.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got an additional 10 days as the family does.
Yeah.
Because we've got stuff to move. I don't know if we drive down with the movers that the military sends to us because they pay and the movers and everything to move us.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know how vehicles work in that.
Careful, so. You're touching your mic.
That's where my arm rests. Sorry, guys. Sorry if you heard.
Yeah, we'll have to plan a time for me to come down there and hang out and check out some spooky places.
Oh, yes. Also, something else I forgot. Route 66, one of our favorite road trip songs, Highway to Hell, was written about Route 66.
Oh, joy.
So, you guys gotta go listen to that song now that we're at the end of the podcast, and go listen to an awesome song that makes you think of, what is it? Resident Evil? No, not Resident Evil.
Iron Man.
No.
Well, it's AC/DC, isn't it?
Not the song, not the singers. I'm thinking of a movie. It's not Resident Evil. It's... Oh my god, the one where the logs fly off the back of the truck and impale
Final Destination.
There we go. Final Destination. That is one of the very few movies that makes me screech and scream and cringe.
Yeah, I still occasionally come across, like, I'll come up behind a logging truck and I'm like, nope.
I've come behind trucks with, like, I don't know, maybe it is properly secured, but that they don't look secured to me, and they're carrying, like, metal poles of varying mm-hmm. sizes, and they don't have anything on the back, like, no netting on the back, and I'm just like, you can have them strapped all over the top all you want. If you slam on your brakes or something, one of those is gonna fly out. There ain't no way I'm turning behind you.
Nope.
And now I see, like, glass things hanging while people are putting glass in new buildings and stuff, and I'll, like, walk across the street.
Oh, man.
That movie, like, scarred me for life, and I am very paranoid about things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh.
All right. We should probably wrap this up. I gotta show you that video. So we have the Facebook page, Instagram, Twitter, All Things That Go Bump in the Night podcast. Yeah. Just, you know, recommend us to your friends and family that you think will be interested in us. Obviously, don't recommend us if people are not interested. But
if they aren't into the spooktacularness that we embody.
Exactly. But yeah, I think this about wraps it up. Have a good night, guys.